I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today is Dr. Michael Finkelstein, the Slow Doctor, who is the author of Slow Medicine, Hope and Healing for Chronic Illness, endorsed by Andrew Weil, M.D., and Mehmet Oz, M.D. Dr. Finkelstein is the founder and medical director of Sun Raven, the home of Slow Medicine. He is an adjunct professor at SUNY Binghamton. He has been featured in top media outlets, including the New York Times and CNN. He has presented at leading venues, including GE Corporation and Omega Institute. And he blogs on the topic of Slow Medicine for the Huffington Post. Dr. Finkelstein was trained at premier institutes for both conventional and integrative medicine, and he is the recipient of numerous distinctions. Drawing from his diverse medical expertise, Dr. Finkelstein offers both a micro and macro point of view on today's healthcare needs and challenges, and provides a tried and true solution for healing individual patients and the medical system as a whole with Slow Medicine. More information is available at slowmedicinedoctor.com/Michael-Finkelstein/. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Finkelstein, and I look forward to hearing about Slow Medicine. Now first, what is Slow Medicine?
I think slow medicine is best understood as a treatment for the fast world and how it affects us. So most people I know have a chronic condition, which I would call sympathetic overdrive. Mm-hmm. And so when I start to think about that, when I sort of see that and its effects on my patients, I saw how being locked in this fight-or-flight mode is hyperstimulating in such a way that it impairs the body's natural healing response. And so what I thought was really needed was an antidote to this locked-on sympathetic system. Our body then has the parasympathetic nervous system, which in a word is slow. Mm-hmm. We get slower, we get back in balance, we restore the harmony on all levels, not just the physical cellular level, but then our way of expressing ourselves in our lives comes into better alignment, and actually we have a better quality of life. Mm-hmm. So slow medicine brings this all together, connects the dots between the physical body, what heals that, but it uses the mental, emotional, and spiritual states of our existence to accentuate and create this integrated approach, which I think is superior to any other.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And how then did you transition from conventional medicine to slow medicine?
Well, you know, about 15 years into my medical practice, I was an internist practicing outside of New York City, and having sensed that there was something missing from the Western medical model, it wasn't until I started to share my patients' frustration when I started to get hypertension. My blood pressure started to rise, probably as a result of the stress of my own life and the practice of medicine and managed care and just what I was doing beyond practicing medicine. And I said to myself, gee, Michael, do you want to take medications like you're recommending to your patients, or do you want to do something different? And right then and there, I got it. Mm-hmm. I said, you know what? Oh, very few people want to jump to medications, but most doctors don't have sort of the understanding or the background or the training mm-hmm. to offer more. So I said to myself, you know, I'd rather be one of those few doctors who does know more, and I went back to school mm-hmm. and because I wanted to do something better.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it interesting that so many of the things that we do in life relate to something that has happened to us, and it's almost like something is happening to us to force us in a little different direction?
Well, you know, I think there's something really actually beautiful in that, because mm-hmm. I sense that while we're individuals on many levels, we also are very connected.
Mm-hmm.
More like multiple cells in a multicellular organism. And so when something happens to our right arm, you know, our left arm is affected too.
Mm-hmm.
And so when something happens to our brother or sister, whether that's literal or figurative, we're experiencing it. There's no real health in the world unless, for the most part, everything is whole.
Right.
Everything is health.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, when somebody gets sick and they're motivated to make adjustments in their own life, think about how influential they can be. Look at your own story for others. And mm-hmm. so this, you know, to me, I think we're on a trajectory. We have our individual lives. We hope to lead in meaningful ways, but we're contributing to something even greater
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
goes beyond even the single life, which is why I think the spiritual understanding or the value of spirituality has great relevance to the subject of health.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Finkelstein, how do you define health?
Well, you know, I see health as a functional state of being. So as opposed to how I learned in medical school, which is the absence of disease or, mm-hmm. you know, good numbers, blood tests, and normal x-rays, to me it's the way a person actually functions with whatever body they have. And therefore, it is really an amalgamation of how that physical body does work in relationship to the mind and the mental emotional state of that person and their relationships, meaning to other people, to the natural world, to the divine, to themselves, how we function in communities, and how each individual serves a purpose into the broader context of life, which is something I mentioned before. So to me, health is an integration of all that we experience at any one time, and it's functional, and it's a state of being.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. I like that. And what is one of the first questions that you ask when you see a patient?
Well, you know, it surprises people, but, you know, I ask them their story, actually. You know, tell me your whole story of your life and how you feel, what's going on, what brings you here. But then, since most of my work is surrounded on prompting people with what I think are thoughtful questions to get them to think for themselves and come up with good answers so that they can see their own path very clearly. Of course, I guide them. But the first question I really ask them, I sort of make the point, I say, you know, let's say I was a magician. Let's say you came to the right guy that, you know, I actually have a magic wand and I could wave it and I can get rid of all your ailments. Now the question I'm going to ask you is, what are you going to do with your life?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want people to really put into context right away why they want to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
What is going to actually give them the energy they need to make the adjustments, the changes? You know, what's their passion? Because it takes work to be healthy. This is not
right.
something, you know, that we're necessarily blessed with for our entire life. I mean, maybe for a certain number of years while we're children, we seem to go on somewhat indifferently. But after a while, we realize, no, it takes a little bit of effort to stay in balance in that functional state of health that I spoke of.
Mm-hmm. And how do people usually respond when you ask them that question?
Well, you know, it gets them to pause a little bit, but I think they do understand that, yes. You know, I need to be motivated to be healthy. You know, one mm-hmm. way of motivating people, though, that's common is fear. You know, if you don't stop smoking, you're going to get cancer. If you, you know, don't, you know, work on losing weight, you're going to have a heart attack. I mean, these are the things that we hear and we talk to ourselves and our friends tell us all the time. And fear is a motivator, but I prefer the carrot. And the carrot is, you know, what would you really have if you were really in balance?
Mm-hmm.
And isn't that exciting? So the question gets people to think that way, and I think it's a little bit more uplifting, a little bit more upbeat to think about it. Of course, it still takes work. There's going to be sacrifices. You know, I have usually 2 or 3 hour conversations with people when I see them because this is not something that happens quickly without really looking at a lot of pieces. But it's the most intelligent way to start this conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you find that most people have a passion?
Well, yes, I think most people do have a passion, but they may not necessarily be able to come up with it at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
But it does drive the point that it is somewhat important to understand why you want to be healthy, why you feel deserving of health, and for that one has to have sort of a meaning to their life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be what people tell us it should be. It doesn't have to be that we have a profession or that we, you know, make a certain amount of money or we build enough, you know, whatever we're building to, you know, qualify. It's really what's in our heart, mostly,
mm-hmm.
and how we can serve humanity or the natural world or the divine, but something, there's service, you know, that each of us is capable of doing that really declares our unique place in this world.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about my mother as you were talking about this because she had cancer of the cervix of the uterus in 1948, I think it was. And she went to the hospital knowing the family did not expect her to live to get there. But when she came home, our family doctor told her he didn't think she would have lived to get to the hospital. And her response was, well, I had three children that had not finished high school. I had to get home to make sure that they graduated from high school. So she had something that was important to her to do, and she survived and lived many years after that.
Well, you know, that gets to the point of the power of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why that question that I ask, I think, is important, because if people bring to mind something that's very meaningful and that they see their own place in that world and they really believe they deserve health despite what doctors may tell them, despite mm-hmm. what's supposed to happen, we know, all of us know, because we've heard these stories, we have examples in every one of our lives, that somebody beat the odds. How does that happen?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't happen usually because of the pure physical interventions. It happens usually because of that and somebody's powerful mind.
Can you tell us the connection between a healthy relationship and a healthy body?
Well, I think most people know the opposite. When our relationships are in trouble, when we're struggling with whomever, whether it's our parents, our children, our significant other, our friends, our community, the natural world, when we're struggling, when we feel friction, when we go to bed and we can't even fall asleep because it's on our mind, the troubles that we have with people or things or you know, the world, it's inflammatory. It drives ourselves to states that are the antithesis of the balance and the health that we, you know, really would like. And so relationships really are the best barometer. The quality of our relationships are the best barometer of our health. So when we have harmony in our relationships, and of course it doesn't have to be perfect. Very few people have every one of their relationships in order, but when in balance, there's harmony. When we do some work to restore harmony, when we end relationships that are not serving us, when we really clean things up and take care that way, it is a very important central part of what makes us and keeps us healthy.
I think if I remember right, that was one of the three important components of overcoming a stressful situation was relationships.
Yeah. I mean, very few people have at any one moment perfect relationships, but many people know how much they suffer if they don't deal with those effectively. And so, it really implores us, if we want to be healthy, to work on our relationships. The idea, the ideal is to keep them in good shape to begin with, and when there are issues, learn to communicate with other people effectively, constructively, and occasionally learn to let go. But there's all those different things that are parts of what makes somebody successful in their life, which is to navigate through their relationships.
Great. Then, Dr. Finkelstein, can you tell us about sympathetic overdrive?
Yeah, we have this fight-or-flight response. When we're scared and we're shocked, in the days we were living on the savannah, and if a lion, sort of leapt out at us, we would be able to run faster than usual to survive because our body had this sympathetic nervous system which kicked in, which is to increase our heart rate, move more blood to the muscles so we could run faster, diverting it away from things like our intestines and our brain and our immune system, because at that moment we just need to run. And so it was a perfectly designed system for acute life-threatening emergencies. However, it was not meant to be locked on. We now live in a world where we're bombarded with so much information, so much stimuli, so much stress from many different angles at the same time, with the expectation that we handle so much more, that this system is locked on, and it is not meant to be turned on so chronically, which leads to depletion of minerals, electrolytes, the forced flow of adrenaline and other hormones through our system, which really does direct blood away from things like our digestive tract and our immune system. And so we wind up with these chronic ailments as a result of chronic sympathetic stimulation, which I would call sympathetic overdrive. And so, as I said, the antidote is the parasympathetic, and that's slow medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, as you were talking, you mentioned mineral depletion, et cetera, and I've had experiences with mineral imbalances over the last 2 or 3 years, and I'm wondering now, is this a result of getting older, or is this a result of depletion in our food supply, or what causes the, because I know other people that are having mineral imbalances that are creating, especially potassium is one, and magnesium is another one that a lot of people, you know, have problems with. Is that aging, or is that our food, well, I know our food supply is a mess, but is that food supply, or what is causing that?
Well, you know, it's multifactorial, but I would say aging is the least of it.
Mm.
When we get older, yes, it's true, some of our cellular functions aren't quite as strong.
Uh-huh.
However, a healthy older adult, and I mean older, 80s, 90s, older,
mm-hmm.
should, on a cellular level, still be working pretty well. So when there's depletion or deficiency, it usually means one of several things. So one you mentioned. So if our food supply is deficient in certain things, like magnesium in particular, then other similar elements, like potassium,
mm-hmm.
don't get absorbed very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one. So we could have deficiencies because what we put into our body may not be as balanced as we need. Water, by the way, has a lot to do with this. When we're dehydrated in any level, you know, our electrolytes and mineral balance sometimes is affected just by dehydration alone. So we can fix the dehydration by drinking adequate quantities of water, and we could think about supplementation because we can't rely so much on our food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. The second is we could be consuming more or less enough of that, but if we are made toxic by other things in the food or environment, heavy metals, phytochemicals,
mm-hmm.
things that bind or affect the storage of certain minerals and electrolytes, then we'll have that problem as a result of the other toxins, let's say, in our system.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, those toxins affect the function of major organs like the liver and the kidney, which are largely responsible for some of this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second thing. And then lastly, very important, and more people are talking about these days, is that we may not be so toxic and we may have adequate food, but if our digestive tract isn't functioning well,
mm-hmm.
meaning it's not absorbing what we're putting into it, then no matter whether we take it as a supplement or eat it in our food, if our intestinal tract is not absorbing things properly, then we may have an issue there. And so a lot of focus right now is on the health of the digestive tract.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
are talking about eliminating those things that are toxic, cleansing, water for sure, eating more green leafy vegetables, getting away from animal products, but then also considering supplements like probiotics and other things that restore the natural balance in the intestinal tract to sort of maximize this. So in all likelihood, all of those contribute. And, you know, for an individual, it can be any different mm-hmm. combination. But all are worth paying attention to, making
mm-hmm.
sure the food is, you know, wholesome, avoiding toxins, considering cleanses, working with our digestive tract. And that's just on the physical level. Our
mm-hmm.
emotional, you know, the stress. If you are stressed, meaning, let's say, chronic pain, or you're, you know, an anxious person, or, you know, people are worried, and they have issues, let's say, with finances or relationships, then the body produces adrenaline. When adrenaline is produced from the adrenal gland, it requires cells to work in different ways, which, you know, utilize more of the minerals. And so, particularly magnesium, again. So,
mm-hmm.
chronic stress is another reason for mineral
mm-hmm.
depletion.
Mm-hmm.
The antidote to all of that is, you know, along the lines of what many people talk about when they talk about holism, but what I write about in my book, Slow Medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's very complex, and most of this you would not get from a traditional physician. Isn't that correct?
Well, you know, they may be able to touch on those things I just did, but to really help a person then organize
mm-hmm.
their life
mm-hmm.
and pull
mm-hmm.
together without feeling overwhelmed but feeling supported means getting good, clear information, And then maybe finding a good, you know, support in your community, other mm-hmm. people, not mm-hmm. necessarily relying so much on your doctor.
Mm-hmm. Good. Great. Then what are some daily practices that activate the body's ability to heal itself?
The prototypical practice is a deep breath, literally, just taking a deep breath, you know, a belly breath, an abdominal breath, one that causes the diaphragms underneath your lungs to descend into your abdomen the way a puppy or a baby would breathe. That breath stimulates the vagus nerve, mm-hmm. and the diaphragm descends that way, and that sends through the body the counter-regulatory hormones to this adrenaline fight-or-flight response. And so deep breathing, anything that causes that relaxation response, will be useful. And so there's many ways people do it. I mean, you could just sit there and think about breathing slowly. People meditate or pray. People can take gentle walks through the woods or sit on a park bench and look at the, you know, the geese on a lake. I mean, there are all sorts of different ways to put people into that state mm-hmm. of peace and tranquility. Anything that works to do that is going to push that pause button, turn off the sympathetic nervous system, and create innate healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good. Then you have a medical center, and can you tell us why you selected a farm as the place for your center?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things. I used to work, like most doctors, in a clinical setting, in a medical office building, then for a while in a hospital. And it was interesting, the beginning of almost all my conversations with my patients were what a hassle it was to get there, find parking, go in the elevator, or they just said, you know, the whole building makes me nervous, coming mm-hmm. in here I smell the antiseptics or whatever. I mean, the, you know, sort of the non-conscious response before people even saw me was that they were a little anxious. Once I started to think about healing, I said, gee, it would be very important for me to figure out what kind of environment would be conducive to the healing response as opposed to one that would, you know, sort of be antithetical to it. So, you know, then I just thought about where that might be, and I said, gee, it has to be very natural. It has to be very close to nature. And I know myself, and I loved gardening as a kid, growing up with my father and grandfather both gardening. I had great memories. Even when I was living in New York City, on my little deck, you know, a little house on my mm-hmm. window, I would have a couple of plants, and I would always have plants inside because there was something about the dirt and the living plant and the need to care for it. It really kept me feeling connected. And so when I had the opportunity to move out of the hospital, I said, gee, I'm going to select an environment which is going to be most in alignment with the principles that I'm practicing now. And that was a farm. So here I have at Sun Raven, which is the name of our farm, is animals that have been rescued and contribute to the, you know, beautiful healing environment. Mm-hmm. I have a large vegetable garden, which is a community project, meaning people come and do the gardening here with us all the time. My patients often, you know, will just spend time there, not because they need to work there or want to, meaning in the sense that they, you know, need to learn something. This is just what I encourage them to do because being there itself is very healing. Of course, when you stick your hands in the dirt, not only are you feeling connected to the earth literally, but the probiotics in the soil, these things I just spoke mm-hmm. about earlier, are mm-hmm. actually going to wind up underneath your fingernails. And rather than sterilize your hands before you eat, I think if you know where the dirt comes from, actually a little bit of dirt is the best way to get the probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and then you're out in the sun, you're breathing fresh air, you may even be walking around in rain and actually not feeling so bad about it, and that is invigorating. And there's something about it. So when people walk onto my land, they see with their own eyes, they feel with their own bodies, they understand with their minds what health looks and feels like.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of being out in the sun and earthing?
Well, you know, I think one of the worst things that the medical community has done to people is made them afraid of the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the most important things to recognize is that we wouldn't have much in the way of life without the sun. It's not accidental that so many ancient cultures worshipped the sun,
mm-hmm.
because without it, again, we'd have very little to really live for. We wouldn't be alive. Every particle of food we consume is a result of sunlight energy that's transformed either by plants or eventually maybe ingested by animals, but still a result of sunlight. And so to be afraid of the sun is unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
One can be mindful of how much sun exposure to get because, yes, you can burn and skin cancer is associated with sun exposure, but without sun exposure, other cancers are more likely.
Mm-hmm.
And so our immune system and our mental state is directly related to an adequate amount of sunlight, direct sunlight. And so, no, I want to restore people's faith in the value of the sun to keep them moderate, though, and and mindful, but to just do away with that fear. The fear state is, again, pushing the sympathetic nervous system, and people will do better to find ways of staying in balance and checking that fear. And often they need information. They need better information. And they need a community that supports them.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go outside with your friends so that, and everyone not put on the suntan lotion for the first half an hour or an hour, because then you'll feel at least you're not swimming upstream all the time and doing something that nobody else is doing. I think that's, you know, one of the things that we also have to accept about ourselves is that, you know, we do care how other people behave. And if we're acting unusually, it's harder.
Right.
So finding a good community makes a lot of sense to me in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, vitamin D has become so important, and even with cancer, they're finding that the majority of cancer patients tend to have very low vitamin D. And how else can you get it except, you know, getting
out? Well, you know, you can take supplements. It's not the easiest, though, to supplement, because it's a fat-soluble vitamin, meaning it requires fat in the intestinal tract at the same time to really be absorbed effectively.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while you could consume, in a tablet form, vitamin D3, which is the active form, the way the body works is through the skin is it converts inactive vitamin D that happens to be hovering just beneath the surface of our skin in the face of direct sunlight, our body converts it itself, and it converts the right amount, and converts it in a way in balance with the other forms of vitamin D that circulate. And so supplements can't really replace what the natural world does for us. I mean, it could help, but we should not be relying on supplements. And so the best way to get vitamin D into your body is to go out in the sun, and then to consider taking a supplement if that's not adequate.
And,
but not the other way around. Not to forget about the sun and just take supplements. Like, we can forget about eating food and just take vitamins. I'm not sure we'd actually be as healthy, even if we could replace every single one of the nutrients, because what would life be if you don't eat?
Right, right.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it'd be, maybe your vitamin, you know, C level will be normal, but never to have an orange? I don't know. That, to me, is not life.
Right. Now, you mentioned working in the garden and getting your hands dirty and all, and I think that's probably somewhat like people talk about earthing, where you need to, you know, if you don't get out, go barefooted at the beach or go barefooted in the grass or do some of these things. But now they have come up with earthing mats where you plug it into the...
Yeah, well, you know, again, so the principle is, okay, so the earth, you know, is this great electromagnetic field. Because of its weight, you know, it's got gravity, and that's electromagnetics. And so astronauts, as an example, don't do well in space without gravity. So they actually, you know, NASA figured that out, and now they have various types of gravity simulators, if you will. But simulation is not the same. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess if you can't go outside and sit on the lawn or go to a park, then maybe you wind up buying an earth mat. But tell you the truth, I'd rather just walk outside. And I would tell people to spare the funds and consider something maybe a little bit more important when the earth is right outside their door. And the sunlight.
Great. And where do you see medicine going, or medicine of the future?
I'm happy to say that I think doctors are waking up a little. They're waking up because their patients are waking them up by saying, will you please look at this like food? Will you please advocate for us like, you know, good, you know, discussion, honest discussion about things like preventative health practices? And let's, you know, talk about putting pressure on our government and political organizations to help us be healthier by subsidizing things that are better for us. So they want doctors to be better advocates, and they want doctors to be more informed. And I think that's what's happening. However, I think the truth is, in the long run, we're going to have to be our best doctors, meaning people are going to have to take care of themselves as number one. Because the best thing that doctors can do for us is save us in a life-threatening emergency. That's where their work right now is great, and I really respect them and appreciate what modern science has done. But they're not so good for the day-to-day life. For that, we need a combination of a good teacher, a good doctor, a good farmer, a good preacher. And we put that all together, and I think we have, you know, good advisors and helpful information and activities. But a doctor is, you know, maybe not the person we're going to want to address all those other things. And so let's keep them in their place, and let's medicine evolve where people are given more power, more information, more opportunity, and guidance to take better care of themselves. That's where I see the future being. And I don't think we're going to be relying on doctors quite as much.
Right. I don't either. And I think that the internet has come along at a time when it is probably going to be more useful for people looking up about things that they want. Like if the doctor says you got thus and such, they can go to the internet and they can look up and find what they should be doing. And I think that assists in being a little more self-care than has been the case in the past.
Oh, absolutely. I think that there is so much more information, and there are stories of people who have done this that way and encouraging others, like your own story, to see that there might be alternatives than, you know, just winding up always going to a hospital or a doctor when, you know, you have an ailment, or using that wisely in combination with other things. The downside of all this information, though, is people have to learn to discriminate
right,
you know, fact from fiction, or things that may be a little on the misleading side. And so this is where I think people still value some degree of caring expertise, not always necessarily has to be a physician, but somebody who is knowledgeable, who could help individuals make good decisions, because there's a lot of information out there, and I've read it, that I think is, you know, raises some red flags for me as far as whether it's trustworthy and whether or not it's by itself good advice. You know, and as we talked about before, life and health are very involved. There are a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of dots that need to be connected. And it's, you know, it's one thing to say, okay, well, maybe I'll take a probiotic to help my digestion, but there needs to be a discussion about food and stress and life and balance in general, because even good things don't always work if they're done in isolation of some of the other important elements. So it's about bringing it all together. But I think we can do better as a culture, supporting each other in that. But I do believe the evolution of medicine is going to coincide with the evolution of our society, where we just take better care of each other. And we just work. And we also see the bigger picture, which is that we're not just looking to get through our lives for 99 years and just sort of, you know, check the box. I think we want to contribute something to the growth and evolution of this amazing life we've been blessed to have, and go beyond it, contribute something to the divine plan. That's not just sort of holding your breath and getting through it. That's actually saying to yourself, asking questions and working with others, how can we actually improve what we're all experiencing? How can we reduce suffering on a global level? Those are the questions that I think will be part of this larger question, which will not only affect us collectively, but will have impact on the individual life.
Right. And Dr. Finkelstein, exactly how do you help people? Or if you could give us some examples of people that have come to see you, and after you got by the question of, you know, why do you want to feel better?
You know, the way I work is, I sort of help people first take a good inventory of where they are in their lives, to ask them enough questions so that they could sort of see all the pieces of this puzzle at once. So it's sort of, it's along the lines of doing a jigsaw puzzle. Imagine if you had 100 pieces in the box, and you decided, well, I'll just take out 30. I don't need to take out all 100. I'll take out 30. What would your chances be of completing that puzzle? Not very good. So what I do is I sit down and I ask people, actually I have 77 questions. which mm-hmm. is sort of the thrust and the way my book is organized. And I ask people 77 questions. Several are about relationships, several are about work, life's purpose, many are about how our physical body works and our mind state, et cetera. And it's like taking out all those pieces from the box and laying them on the table, flipping those pieces over. Then what I do is I help people, you know, get started with this project of assembling the puzzle. And as you would a jigsaw puzzle, I say to people, let's start with the easy stuff. Let's find the edges and the corners first. Drink more water. Get outside every day.
Mm-hmm.
Take a day off once a week and sort of enjoy a Sabbath day. You know, work on some of your relationships. Do some writing. Those are the easy pieces. More difficult might be our relationships to our parents or to children or how we feel about our bodies and our self-esteem and how we deal with emotions like anger and fear. Those may be much more difficult, but I don't tell people to start there. I tell them to start where it looks more feasible and easy. And just as you would a jigsaw puzzle, eventually, as you work on the edges and the corners, things start filling in, and you then say, gee, I guess this strange piece in the middle I could actually do now. And that's how it works. It's a blueprint for health. And so I try to make it very practical, but I also start by being honest and saying, look, there are a lot of these pieces, and you cannot really solve this puzzle unless you look at the pieces. So I spend hours with people, or I've written this book so people can spend hours on their own, to look and say, okay, here's the inventory. Now I got it. Now let's start, and here's a practical way to start tackling this. And I make this suggestion right up front. This is a lifelong process. This is not, you don't do this when you have an emergency necessarily, so it can be very useful for the healing response because it can calm people down. It can get them out of that sympathetic nervous system. But this is what you do as a normal course of living. This mm-hmm. is how you take care of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it serves a purpose, because it helps people feel confident that they're back in control in some way. Often when people are sick, they feel out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so I try to restore power to people
mm-hmm.
and that positive mind and the hope for healing.
Mm-hmm. That restoring power is sometimes difficult to do. It's like my brother was diagnosed with lung cancer about a year and a half ago up in Sackett's Harbor. And his doctor talked him into radiation, and they did 5 days a week for 5 weeks, which was horrible on a 91-year-old man. And
right.
He barely made it through those 5 weeks, and then he couldn't walk, and then he lasted about 2 or 3 weeks. But it was very difficult for me because I believe that once you make a decision, it's empowering and people should support that. But
right.
based on my experience with lung cancer, that was the last thing I would have done. So,
yeah.
But it was I felt it was empowering, and so I supported his decision,
right.
even though it was not the decision I would have made. I did ask him if he would take the Laetrile, which is what I took, in addition
right.
to the radiation, but I don't think he remembered to take it very often.
Mm.
And so,
well, everyone has their own path, and it's true. When people feel a little bit more in control, they're better off. There's a lot less fear and anxiety,
mm-hmm.
and a lot
mm-hmm.
less that sympathetic nervous system, which is, again, the antithesis of healing. But it's very hard when people are faced with an acute illness to,
mm-hmm.
take control of the reins.
Mm-hmm.
Because they often don't feel well. That's part of the reason. When people get sick, they are sick, so they don't feel well,
mm-hmm.
And they're scared. So this is why so much of my work is to encourage people to create communities of support.
Mm-hmm.
Often it's our family, but to try to, get this going before something like this happens, so that when and if a crisis emerges, that one immediately can fall back on the reassurance of a lot of people around who support it. And even if somebody makes a decision,
mm-hmm.
again, like you said, that not everyone agrees with, they'll be supported and loved. In the end, none of us are going to survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Death isn't necessarily the failure, but is to constantly be awake and thinking about our relationships and taking care of our business. Meaning our relationships, the quality of relationships, how we want people to feel and know about us and what's in our heart, that's the best we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. at the end of people's lives, if that's the experience that they have and the others around them have, then though death is always a loss and sad, there are different qualities that people experience at that part of their lives. And my one of the things I emphasize in my writing is to live the life you would want to live today,
mm-hmm.
So that you don't have regrets
mm-hmm.
tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you. Is there a diet that you recommend to your patients?
Yes. You know, it starts with a diet that is conscious of quality. You know, very often dietitians talk about quantity. How many calories, mm-hmm. how much protein, micronutrients, vitamins, minerals, our weight. You know, these are all numbers that are used when, in the conversation of diet. I'd like people to get off of that into quality. Think about the best quality food you can consume in the moment that's available to you, and try to connect quality with the enjoyment. Most people know what it feels like to get a vine-ripened tomato from mm-hmm. their backyard, warmed in the sun, and pop that into their mouth, compared to what it feels like in January when you go to a market and you get this sort of like a funky orange hard thing that's tasteless. And so quality makes a difference in terms of the impact of the food. Of course, usually quality also suggests something about its wholesome nutrients. So I think wholesome nutrients through quality nutrition and satisfaction. People should enjoy the moments of eating and consume it with a lightness in their heart. That's the diet I recommend. Yes, I tell people more vegetables, less animals, more whole foods, less processed foods. But to me, quality drives the equation, and sitting down to eat, creating an environment that feels like it's supporting digestion and sort of the fulfillment and the nourishment on levels, not just the physical, but the mental, emotional, and the spiritual at the same time. So mm-hmm. I think people should light candles and bring flowers on their table and talk about the food as a gift.
Mm-hmm.
That leads to the best quality nutrition people can have.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on organic versus non-organic, and also on genetically modified organisms?
Well, you know, when you think about quality, you think about generally, in part, not just the food itself, but the process of its growth,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the farmer, the mm-hmm. seed, all of those things come into play. And so something that's really natural, that's mm-hmm. Plants have been loved, or the animals have been loved and treated with respect.
Mm-hmm.
The earth has been cared for, not manipulated. Those, to me, you know, are the principles of organic or sustainable or biodynamic farming. And so I think that suggests something about the quality.
Mm-hmm.
We know for a fact, and, you know, people can shoot down the argument that there's some organic farms that use industrial practices and mm-hmm. maybe people aren't nice and they rip people off. I'm not going there, because, though, right. I mean, I know that's true, but what I mean is,
right.
as a general rule, I think you do better by thinking, where did this come from, what's the quality of the farm, and the quality of the farm usually leads to the quality of the produce.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably a little bit more important, though, than being organic, even though I think that that's a reflection, because I think there are many farms nearby where people live where it may or may not qualify as organic. The
right.
farmer may have not chosen mm-hmm. to get all the regulatory, mm-hmm. Acknowledgement, but the practice may be sustainable and beautiful. So I think, you know, there's that local element to mm-hmm. me is mm-hmm. very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as genetically modified organisms, I think we need to understand why that practice exists. And we're not eating genetically modified organisms, really, that's not the problem. It's the fact that they're genetically modified so that they can be sprayed more heavily with pesticides and herbicides.
Mm-hmm.
So the tomato is sort of okay, but the fact is that it was genetically modified so that the plant could be sprayed so that it grew better. So what we're actually consuming when it's genetically modified is more pesticides and herbicides. And so I don't like that practice, because it suggests that we're going to try to make more toxic our environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as a principle, and I applaud countries in the world that sort of eliminate this as a possibility,
right.
I think the United States should do the same. I just don't think it is the right thing to do on a social, humanitarian level, as stewards of the planet and as people who care for other people. So, no, I would steer away from that. I would try to do what I could by using my money to support other businesses so that the businesses that use genetically modified organisms aren't as successful, because I would like them to go away.
Right. I agree. You mentioned earlier about sunshine versus vitamin D and the vitamin and sunshine versus the mats. Can you tell us what your views are on supplements?
Yeah. In quick phrase, supplements are supplemental. What that means is I would not rely on supplements to get me through my life.
Mm-hmm.
I would think about what's the foundation of my practice for health. Good food, wholesome food, as we talked about. Eating in the company of other people in a beautiful environment is where we get more nourishment. Being at peace and tranquility, being outside in nature. That's the foundation for our life.
Mm-hmm.
Then if we wind up being a little vitamin deficient or nutrient deficient because either we have a symptom or sign of such, or a doctor does blood work and we see that, then I think that's when supplements are useful. But when people walk around with bags of supplements that they bought because they read that somebody thought it was a good idea to consume that, that to me is a reflection of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And though the supplements might be useful, I'm not saying they're not useful, and they may serve the purpose for which they were advertised, the practice of thinking about supplements in any other way than supplemental is perpetuating the anxiety and pushing the sympathetic nervous system to this fight-or-flight response, which is not as healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like people to feel more confident in their day-to-day approach to life, and that's what I emphasize.
Mm-hmm.
And then, end of that day, if they feel they need just a little bit touch more magnesium, then maybe they take a supplement of magnesium. And maybe in their medicine cabinet they have 5 bottles instead of 20, and they take 3 regularly and 2 or 4 when they get sick, and they sort of leave it at that, and they feel confident, and they have other tools to use in their toolkit as far as how they take good care of themselves, many of which are not physical to begin with, but is just that whole concept of their relationships and the way they, you know, sort of follow the cycles and rhythms of the natural world and how they enjoy their lives and they feel their life is worth meaning. And then that, to me, is the prescription.
Mm-hmm. Because of the time, I think I'm going to ask you one more question before we look at your books and services and all. And the question is about the 7 spokes of your wellness wheel.
Mm-hmm.
If you could tell us about that.
Sure. You know, when I think of health and try to help people organize their approach, I wanted to break it down a little bit so that people have somewhat of an organization. And so I broke it into 7 categories, the physical being one and an obvious one, the mental, emotional being the second. The 3rd, 4th, and 5th have to do with relationships, relationship to other people, relationships to the natural world, and relationships to the divine, which in other words are our relationships, the way we deal with nature, and our spirituality. And then the 6th and 7th spokes have to do with how we live in community and how important that is. And then the 7th has to do with that first question, which is our life's purpose. So
mm-hmm.
What will we do with our life? And to understand that for the achievement of really full health, one probably has to start addressing elements within each of those 7 areas and keep an eye on them to keep all those different muscles in shape so that synergistically, as a whole, they feel more vibrant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. Then, Dr. Finkelstein, would you tell us about your books and services and products you may have and how the
sure.
listeners can locate them and you?
Thank you. So the book is called Slow Medicine, Hope and Healing for Chronic Illness. And almost everything that we've talked about today is found in there with a little bit more explanation and with stories of people who have been identified in a way to illustrate these various points and some very practical guidance in terms of how one does it on their own. But I am also available for a consultation, and people can do that even at distance through Skype. And the best way to reach me and find out about those services and the book and about programs and workshops, because I travel throughout this country and the world to speak in front of audiences and venues anywhere from small churches and bookstores to larger venues like universities and medical schools. And all of that can be found on the website slowmedicine.org, O-R-G, mm-hmm. slowmedicine.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you know, probably a lot of information about that and things that I've written that I hope are not only interesting, but more to the point, inspire people to adopt a way of living that really supports them in their own growth and their evolution and helps us collectively.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is great. And for those who live in New York State, you're in the Binghamton area?
Actually, I'm closer to New York City, in the town of Bedford, actually, which is Westchester County, about 50 miles north of New York City, along the Hudson River. And it's pretty easy to get to anywhere in what we call here the tri-state area, and pretty close to the Connecticut border as well. And a beautiful bucolic area. I live, like you said, on a small farm,
mm-hmm.
and it's very peaceful, and I encourage people even just to come for a visit if you're in the area.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's been very interesting, and as I say, I'm always happy to talk with someone that is interested in a holistic approach, and you sure are, and also someone that is very much into being outside, and I think that you tend to talk more about that than most of the people that I have talked with previously. So that's really
great. You
know,
there's so much about the beautiful world we live in that I think people don't use as much for their own health and well-being. I mean, we go there, we enjoy it, but we don't see it as somewhat of a requirement, the way we see food,
mm-hmm.
as an example.
Mm-hmm.
I would say get a dose of nature every day, and you will be much better off.
Great. Well, I thank you very much. It's been interesting, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Carl, very much. I enjoyed the conversation. Wish you well, too.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. And I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com pages/holistichealthshow and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.